The Concerto Grosso No. 1 by George Frideric Handel, played by I Musici.
Beautiful classical programming here on WHFR Dearborn, WHFR Radio. We thank you for listening. Hope you're enjoying the programming as always. And thanks very much for your pledge of support during our recent on-air radio pledge drive called Radiothon 2009. Yes, the official on-air pledge pitching has ended, but we want to say a special thanks to those of you who have taken the time to call in or write in or go online and pledge your financial support, your tax-deductible contribution to our radio station to allow us to continue presenting beautiful programming like this. If you missed Radiothon for some reason or you didn't have an opportunity to call in or go online and pledge, there is certainly still time. Give me a call anytime, 313-845-9842. That's 313-845-9842. Susan McGraw here, and I will happily take your pledge of support. So thanks to those of you who've already done it, and thanks in advance to those of you who might still.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome to We Are Not Alone. Where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomena. And today, our guest is from Trout Lake, Washington, Mr. James Gilliland. You may have heard of the Gilliland Ranch, and several years ago, Mr. Gilliland had a near-death experience, which resulted in him, like most near-death experiencers, becoming more spiritual and more in tune with nature. And he relocated to Trout Lake, Washington, and began meditation. And several years later, very strange things started happening allegedly on his ranch in Washington, and there were several scientists and news reporters who went out to investigate reports of strange lights, UFOs, orb phenomenon, and well, we'll let him tell you about that. But these are reporters and scientists did leave. Of course, they were skeptical, but when they left, they were quite amazed. And I've seen some video of these from the Gilliland Ranch. And like I say, we'll let him talk about that. Welcome to the show, Ms. Gilliland.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show.
Tell us first about this near-death experience. I've always been fascinated with this phenomenon.
Well, what happened? It was a drowning, and I was out body surfing, and some sneaker waves came in, and it went from about 6 to 8 foot waves to up to 27 foot waves.
Wow.
And just one of them just slammed me. It pulled the water out when it came in, and I tried to get under, and it just slammed me to the ground. And after about the third wave, you know, holding me under, I finally gave up, and I went through the tunnel that, you know, everybody talks about.
Right.
And my near-death experience was a little different because some people go and they stop at one level and they see their family and their friends, and And there's all different experiences in during that near-death experience. It depends on the individual as to what you experience. But I kept going through a lot of levels. I just kept going towards this golden white light. And when I ended up in that light, it was the most blissful, loving experience, you know, you can imagine. And you still have an identity in a sense. You're unique, yet you're one with this greater consciousness and energy that's surrounding you. And there's really no words to explain it. It's just incredible, you know, love and joy and bliss and peace beyond any words.
But you're very conscious.
Yeah, I was totally conscious. And I had a conversation while I was there. I had a conversation with a greater consciousness and energy that was surrounding me. And the first thing I asked was, how can I stay? And there was a thought-to-thought transmission. It came back to me, and the first thing it said is, you know, I never told my children when to come or go. That's free will. And then I asked, how can I earn the right to stay? And it came back to me, and it said, you cannot earn what is given freely and unconditionally. And so I'm going, wait a minute, this isn't the image I was taught, you know, taught about as far as God. You know, I was waiting for some little old man with the laptop, you know, waiting for me.
The laptop?
Yeah.
Checking you in, so to speak?
Yeah, it was going to tell me everything I did and didn't do, you know, or something, you know, but it wasn't anything like that. And the last thing I asked was, how can I serve? And it came back to me, it says, what do you want to do? What brings you joy? And after that experience there, I said, I just want to come back to the earth and you know, share with people about the true nature of the source, what it really, you know, it's not this little old man with a lightning bolt, you know, and a book that keeps track of everybody. It's so far beyond that.
Yeah.
And the last words I heard were, as you wish, and I was back in my body.
So you were given the opportunity to go on or to come back.
Yes, and I chose to come back, which I'm still questioning that choice to this day.
Well, at first you say you wanted to stay. You wanted to remain, am I correct, you wanted to stay in spirit, right?
Well, yeah, it's there's nothing that can compare to it on the earth. It's just so incredibly blissful and loving and joyous, and you know, I wasn't really thinking about it on a permanent basis. I just wanted to stay there as long as I could, basically, you know, because it was just so incredible.
Okay. So did you want to stay there on a permanent basis or stay there, you know, let's stay another week and see how we like it, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Stay as long as I could.
Stay as long as you could and yet come back. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you were granted this. And now let me play devil's advocate here, for the skeptical listeners out there.
Sure.
How do you know that this wasn't just the, as the scientists say, just the brain shutting down?
Yeah, I've heard about that talk, and but you know, that really doesn't hold water, because if you go to any of the Stanford Research Institute work, and anybody that's really done research on near-death experiences, they've kind of blown that out of the water, because people will come back after they've been, you know, totally registered as dead, you know, and they come back and they have all this information and they viewed and saw things that no way they could have seen or heard because they were clinically dead. So,
right.
You know, to me, that the brain wouldn't be wouldn't have all this information, and you know, with the eyes closed, how would they see these things if they weren't outside of their body looking down? So, it just doesn't add up. You know, the where they're trying to say it's something physical, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there isn't a physical apparatus in the brain that connects people to the higher dimensions, and there actually is. So in a way, they're both right, but there is something beyond the physical, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, once as they say in the Bible, once that cord is broke, once the silver cord is broke, then there is no coming back.
But yeah, supposedly. Wow. I know that Bruce Lipton did some incredible work where they found out that the DNA is not the brains of the cell, that actually the antenna outside the cell are receiving information from an unseen source. And there's not enough genetic material in the body to actually make it function, because they expected to find at least 100,000 genes, and they only found 30. So now they're finding out that 70% of the operating instructions is coming from an unseen force that surrounds the body. And so, you know, all the latest breakthroughs in physics and biophysics and things are all pointing in this direction.
The operating instructions for the physical or for the spiritual?
For the physical body.
For the physical body.
Yeah, there's not enough genes to actually operate the body. There's an outside intelligence that is actually running the physical body.
Hmm. So would I be correct in saying that the spirit is animating this chunk of clay, and the spirit has the, let's say, call it a spark of life from the main source, and it's in tune with the main source. Am I getting this right?
Yes. It's
wow.
You know, if you see somebody that dies, if you see a body where the person's died and you look at it, you just you know they're not there. It just has
yeah.
this look to it and this feel to it and everything. There's like nobody home. There's no energy signature or anything there.
Nobody home.
Yeah.
It's a good way to put it.
Yeah. So it's, you can
nice house. Nice house, nobody home.
Yeah. And, you know, when people die, they actually lose a certain amount of weight, which is actually that other body, you know, leaving the physical. It actually has a
right.
weight to it.
Right. I have heard that, too. Yeah, that is true. And yet dead weight, you know, a dead body seems heavier than a live person, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll go figure that one out, so.
Yeah, I haven't hauled around too many dead bodies, so I can't really speak from experience on that one, but I'm sure.
That's what they tell me anyway.
Yeah.
I don't want to find out. Okay, so now after this experience, how long after did you decide, I'm? Where were you at the time, in California?
Yeah, I was down in California,
okay.
and then I tried to make some sense out of it, and there was nobody there. I mean, there was nobody I could talk to because the only people who were there were you know, pretty much fundamentalists.
Mm-hmm.
And they see everything in black and white. It's
right.
either devil or God, and anything they don't understand goes in the devil category. You know, so, and, you know, I didn't really uphold their image of this wrathful, punishing God, so, you know, that we have to, you know, send dollars to appease or whatever. So,
right.
So, you know, that didn't go over too well. And I basically started studying with some yogis and some Tibetan lamas and was initiated there. And they started giving me the answers that I was seeking.
I see. And then you moved at some point to Trout Lake, Washington.
Yeah, I moved to Santa Cruz first.
Okay.
And was living on the coast in Santa Cruz. And after the near-death experience, I was totally ultra-sensitive, and I had real trouble being in the world I was in because I was, you know, this sounds really woo-woo, but the world I came from, I was in commercial real estate, and I had my own office and people working for me. And so I went from that reality just to being blown wide open and ultra-sensitive, and I just pretty much left and sold the business and gave everything away and took off and went and lived in the Redwoods for quite a while.
Hmm. When you say ultra-sensitive, were you picking something up?
Well, I was seeing other dimensions and hearing,
okay.
you know, when I'd meet somebody, they would think one thing, say something and feel something entirely different, and I would get the input on all three at the same time. And
kind of like medium, huh?
Yeah, and I'd see energy fields, and, you know, like the old saying, I'd start seeing dead people.
Yeah.
Light spheres and all the other. Started seeing all these things, and I didn't know how to handle it. So I had to do a crash course in enlightenment and get some training in that area.
Have you ever regretted that decision to get out of real estate? And, well, I guess you wouldn't now in today's climate, but even at that, when it was at its height, did you ever regret that?
No. No, okay. no regrets whatsoever.
Okay. So then you ultimately end up in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And you start meditating, right?
Yeah, I was having visions of the ranch, and I saw the ranch, and I saw the mountain, Mount Adams, and I could see the river, and then a little mountain behind it, and I kept seeing them in meditations over and over again, and I knew I was supposed to be here, and I took a map out of the United States, and I doused it, and I found out where it was. And then I threw the map away and forgot about it. And then all of a sudden I was offered a job up here, and it just felt really right to do. And I took it, and with an import shop. So I took it, and I went up here and ended up right where I'm supposed to be.
Hmm. And then some light started appearing over here.
Yeah, much. I've been here about 23 years, and about halfway into it, I would say we were doing a lot of meditation, teaching inner sensitivity training work, and a lot of process-oriented therapies, and we had a lot of Native Americans come here, and they were doing a lot of ceremonies and things of that nature. And I think what happened is eventually we rose to the occasion and reached a level that they could actually work with us and deal with us, because these are extremely spiritually and technologically advanced beings.
Mm-hmm. These are the Native Americans, then?
Well, no, I'm talking about the UFOs that we started having contact with.
Okay, tell us about that, then.
And, you know, the Native Americans, it's part of their culture.
Oh, yeah.
If you talk to almost any elder that is aware of their history, I mean, they have all kinds of prophecies about the star nations and about the earth changes and the star nations coming in towards the end and helping. And so it's all tied into their culture, you might say. So it's not a problem for them, and a lot of the ceremonies would actually draw them in closer.
Okay, so even many, many years ago, they saw these lights in the sky. They saw these beings coming to Earth.
Is that...
Okay.
Yeah, we have footage. We have video footage of a ship that's flying next to an airplane, and it morphs into a giant cylinder like a pillar cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And then it changes into an arrowhead, and then it morphs into a hand that just looks exactly like holding a hand up in the exact position that, in Hebrew, it's the sign for God.
Mm.
And then this ship morphs back into a golden disc and takes off. So they seem to have been around guiding different people for a long, long time. And, you know, you read about the pillar clouds that were a fire by night, you know, before Moses parted the Red Sea. And,
right.
And, you know, the Native Americans have all kinds of stories, you know, looking at the arrow in the sky, the arrowhead in the sky, and told them where to go.
Hmm.
And, you know, there's all kinds of stories about that, you know, so it's... They seem to have been around forever.
Right. Yeah, they seem to go into different cultures, regardless of the culture. Different American Indians in India, the Indians in India, all over the world, the Egyptians, and in the Holy Bible, all the scripts, everything you see, everything you find in the cave etchings, shall we say.
Yeah, we have that on our website. We have an UFOs in History, and it has, they're, you know, in the pyramids, they're on ancient 7,000-year-old cave paintings, and the Native American petroglyphs are all over there. And,
petroglyphs, yeah.
And what's interesting is that there are tons of frescoes all over Europe with very holy scenes with UFOs in them.
Yeah, I've written a book, that one with the Mother Mary and the ship in the sky.
Yeah, when Jesus is being baptized.
Well, not just that one.
Over him.
Yeah, the one where he's a baby, Jesus, the baby Jesus, and the Mother Mary and the ship in the sky and the guy looking up into the sky with a dog.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
one's on the cover of my book. So
yeah, we have all those on our website.
Yeah. Now, what kind of cameras do you use?
You know, before we didn't really have hardly any equipment at all, and I had a little $200 Sony. It wasn't very, it's an old Sony.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the stuff I got the first footage on. And I got some really good footage on that, but now we've upgraded basically, and now we're using, it's called an iGen, and we've hooked it into, it's an infrared camera with an illuminator on it, and it also, you know, we have the ability to totally scan the sky in infrared, and then to also film any paranormal activity that's happening, you know, with this device. And so we have one of those now that we're using, and we have just the basic Sony cameras with night shot on them, that's what we're filming most of our things on. And we have the night vision goggles as well, the military ones, but it's not hooked up to a camera. We just use those for spotting, you know, the ships. And I wish we could get that one hooked up to a camera. Then we'd have all kinds of incredible footage. Because that one really reaches out there, and you can see the ships better with that than anything.
Okay, now when you say you can see the ships, are we talking about lights in the sky? Are we talking about structured craft?
All the above.
All of the above.
Yeah, we've got metallic craft here that, you know, have been right hovering right over the field, and guests have taken pictures of those, and those are on the website. And they're a little fuzzy, unfortunately. They're not real clear because the fields around the ship are warped, you know, when you try to take these pictures.
Hmm.
But we have most of the stuff we're filming here are just massive light ships and giant triangles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had some massive cylinder ships, and basically we have them in every color imaginable. We have ones that are pink and green and purple and blue and you know, just massive white ones. So far we've seen, you know, pyramid shapes, again, giant cylinders and giant triangles as well. So we're seeing everything here. The amount of ships that we're seeing, even the boomerang ships, we see those too.
All these craft that come close enough to the camera to where you're able to distinguish them as a ship, as a craft of some kind, are all of them, do they come out fuzzy or grainy?
Yeah, unfortunately they do, just because of the fields around the ship. You know, people that have been in this work for a long time realize that especially the higher you go up the continuum or the more advanced beings you're working with, you're going to be working with more of a light ship or a light principle, and you can see them with the naked eye. They're massive lights, and they come in and they get bigger and bigger and bigger, and sometimes they light the whole sky up, and they'll send a pulse, and when you're out in the field, you feel this pulse go through you when they power up, and so they really make their presence known to
now
the people in the field.
Doesn't this grainy, distorted picture add fuel to the skeptic's fire that these are just plugged into the scene, you know?
Not really, because we've got several thousand witnesses that have come up here, and we've got triple PhD Boeing engineers and Air Force Base commanders and pilots, and you know, we have very top-level people. I had a whole group of Skunk Works people here, and a ship came in, it had 7 points of light on it, and it was just massive, and it got huge as it came over the group, and it stopped and hovered, and then it backed up, and it went back the other way.
Hmm.
And they actually testified on Coast to Coast with an interview with Art Bell. So, you know, when you get people of that quality looking at things, and they know what we have in our back engineering programs, they said, these aren't ours. We don't know who this is. And we have some that are really interesting. They're pink in the middle, blue on the outside, and turquoise at the top and the bottom, and it's a pulsing, rotating field.
Goodness.
And when they looked at this, they said, you know, that is extremely high, very, very advanced electronics. You know, that's far beyond anything that we can even imagine.
Right.
So,
right.
And when you have photo, you know, when you have video like that, and then you have this type of witness, or the quality of witnesses that we have, you know, we have Air Force Base commanders that have come up here.
Right.
You know, when you have that much evidence, it's pretty
pretty conclusive,
know.
Huh?
Yeah, it's a pretty done deal.
Yeah. We're going to have to take a break right now, but we will get right back with you. And we need to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And I am David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Mr. James Gilliland of the Gilliland Ranch in Trout Lake, Washington. And we're going to get right back with him. So please don't go away.
They call, send letters, email, and visit your home. They're not friends or family. They're con artists, scammers, and criminals. In times like these, it's important to learn how to protect yourself. Credit card schemes, bogus investment opportunities, and free vacation scams are just a few ways that today's criminals target you and your family. Protect yourself. Never give anyone your social security number, credit card, or bank account information unless you initiated the call. Stay informed of current scams by contacting your Attorney General's office and Better Business Bureau. If you're a victim, reporting the con to the local authorities will prevent others from suffering the same fate. To learn more about how to keep your family safe from con artists and scams, visit ncpc.org. That's ncpc.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Hungry? The Skylight Cafe is convenient and offers a variety of food options to hungry students and staff.
Pizza, daily specials, sandwiches, and entrees.
How about ordering something hot off the grill?
Or if you just want a snack.
The Skylight Cafe has cookies, desserts, chips, fresh fruit, and a wide variety of beverages.
There's even a soup and salad bar. Ours are
Monday through Thursday, 7:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. and
Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m.
The Skylight Cafe.
If you are interested in history, you must realize that the current events of today are affected by the history of the past. If so, you must listen to Then and Now, a program on how history affects current events, and listen to the guests that your host Ned Apigyan presents on the fourth Saturday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m. right here on WHFR 89.3 FM. Making waves from the campus of the Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn, Michigan.
This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Once again, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with Mr. James Gilliland, and from Trout Lake, Washington. And Mr. Gilliland, we were talking about the video that you've taken at the ranch, and the fact that it comes out kind of grainy, kind of messed up. But you know, that's true with a lot of virtually all of these UFOs. They find the wavy lines around the craft. And the skeptics say, well, that must be just plugged in there because they got wavy lines around there. People say, no, that's what I saw in the sky. Is that what you get at the ranch?
You know, pretty much. The thing about the really clear ones, you know, the CGI ones are, you know, most of those are fake. When you see them on there and the ship looks really clear and you can see the detail on them and everything else, because the energy fields around the ships when they're operating, you know, unless they're on the ground, would automatically warp or distort, you know, what you're seeing. And we've even seen them morph. We've seen one ship morph into as many as three or four ships. And we have footage of just this massive ship coming over the top of Mount Adams and dropping down, and then it starts morphing to three, up to four ships. And then we've had that happen two or three times. And you know, this is a wilderness area. There's no way you could get a vehicle up there, and it starts in the sky and comes down on the mountain and starts, you know, doing acts of aeronautic acts that there's no way any kind of a vehicle could do this, and there's no sound associated with them. If that was a helicopter, it'd be so loud we would definitely hear it, or a plane, because it's pretty close.
Yeah, real close, but is this ionized air that we're seeing around there because of the propulsion system of the craft?
Yeah, they have different types of propulsion systems. Mostly there's it's kind of an energy field that's generated around the ships, and a lot of ships aren't physical at all, because when they're flying, they've actually powered up and they've moved up in frequency, and they're not quite physical at all. And there's, you know, nothing we can do. We can't really shoot these. The more advanced ones, we can't shoot them down. There's nothing we can do about them.
They're energy, huh?
Yeah, they move up into a pure energy or a light frequency, you might say, where they're just seen as a light until they, you know, drop the frequencies down and power down again, and then they become physical.
Okay, now the beings that are within these craft, are they also, are they physical that are being taken up into those, how do I put this, where the energy, they become the same, on the same energy wavelength as the craft?
They can be. They have that technology where they can actually, you know, beam you right out of bed and put you on the craft if they want.
Right.
And it just depends on the group that you're working with. Some have extremely advanced technology. It's more of a spiritual technology, and then others have more down-to-earth technology where they can actually move through walls and things like that, but it's more of a physical, you feel it's more of a physical experience.
Right. Now, earthly technology is in its infancy on that type of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the average person today would say, oh, that's crazy, taking you through walls and mm-hmm. making you invisible, and they're invisible. And now we're finding out that, like I say, we're baby steps, but we're finding out that that's true, that can be done. We're just now starting to learn how it can be done,
mm-hmm.
but it can be done. And maybe some advanced civilization elsewhere in the universe has already done this. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you go into the Black Project and the technology there, they've been playing with this kind of technology for quite some time now, and they have it. But these other beings, you know, some of these beings, one of the ones that we have her ship on film, she's about 2 million years ahead of us in evolution. So you can imagine, you know, a couple hundred years ago, we were in horse and buggies, you know, and then we went to the moon plus. And you know, you think about 2 million years, where would we be?
Yeah, I hear. Now, has this video of yours? I've seen some of the video. You graciously sent me a short video on this stuff, and very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing up close. I mean, it appeared to be lights in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
But
On the website, we have some things right in the front field.
Okay.
You know, hovering over the trees on the website.
And aircraft, right.
Some things pretty close, and they're metallic, too, as well.
Right, right. And the website, give us the website.
It's eceti.org, E-C-E-T-I.org. And we have a new video. Now, I don't know which one. Did you see the movie Contact Has Begun? Or?
I'm
not sure which video.
I don't know. You send it to me.
Yeah, I'm not sure what. I mean, I have somebody else send the things out, so I'm not exactly
sure. Oh, okay. You just said, send this fool something, right? And he said.
Yeah,
and he
yeah.
Did. Okay.
So yeah, but we just put a new one together that has giant triangle ships flying. We have the mountain opening up, a door on the mountain, and we have all kinds of ships flying around the mountain. So
okay, now, wait a minute. A door on the mountain opening up.
Yeah.
Can you expound on that a bit?
Well, we have about three or four clips of Mount Adams, which has a long, long history of UFO activity.
Right.
Going back to the Native Americans stories. And Kenneth Arnold actually lost sight of the ships when they landed on the western slopes of Mount Adams. So there's a long, long history. Dr. Jalen Hynek, David Akers, Greg Long, Bill Vogel, all those guys, the old-timers there, they all worked on projects there and investigations. And what they did is they tried to catch them, and they tried to they worked on a different level, and rather than we work on a whole different level, because we invite them to come versus trying to, you know, snag them and catch them. And so it's a different way of operating. But they actually, in the middle of the mountain there's an area there where if you go there, there's nothing there. That you won't see anything there at all. It just looks like a big cliff face. But when we're filming, all of a sudden we see this giant, massive light open up in that exact same spot. And it's like a door, and things come in and out of it. But and we have it on film, this door opening up on several occasions, and it's just a massive light. And in the area where it is, it's wilderness area, there's no way you can't even take a helicopter in there, basically, but you can't have any kind of a vehicle whatsoever in this area. And
have you physically gone back in there and checked this out?
Yeah, and we've hiked up and just walked all over those areas, and all you see is giant lava boulders and, you know, terrain that no vehicle could ever get over. I don't care what kind of vehicle you have, you couldn't drive over these massive lava boulders and the crevices that, you know, are going through them and everything else. It's just, I mean, you can't even walk across it. You have to kind of pick your path, and there's a couple little trails around this area. But it's pretty just intense terrain. There's no way anything could go up and down this sheer cliff that's there, and that we know of, you know, unless it's some kind of a, it'd have to be some kind of a hovercraft, a silent hovercraft to do what they do. And they, you know, we're thinking, how could you possibly generate something of that luminosity that far away? It's 13 miles away, and it looks like just a massive light, probably a quarter mile wide. I mean, it's just a massive, brilliant light. You'd have to drop in all kinds of generator there's a massive bank of halogen lights and everything to do what we filmed. And,
so have you set up cameras in there to try to see what's going on when this...
You know, somebody did that, actually. There were, and I don't know who did it, but somebody set all these poles up there with the whole network of cameras on them.
Right.
And we went up there to check it out, and all the poles were snapped off at the base.
Are you kidding?
And some of them just had about five or six big rocks stacked around them, and they were totally snapped off at the bottom. And there were at least 4x4s, and some were like 6x6s, I think. And to generate that kind of force to snap those off, I mean, it had to be something like a Bigfoot or something. I don't know.
Well, either physical or energy.
Yeah, but it snapped them off without moving the rocks, which I can't figure that one out. I can see if it was cut off cleanly or whatever, but they were snapped off without even moving the four or five rocks stacked around the pole to hold it up.
No, no.
And whatever it was, something did not want that being done there, and it just took it out. And I don't know who was behind that or who was involved in it. We never could find out.
Maybe it's just the energy that that they generated to do their thing that caused this to happen.
Yeah, I have no idea. All I saw were their poles snapped off, and somebody tried to put a bunch of poles up there and rig up some kind of a monitoring system.
Are there trees up there?
No, not in that area. There's no trees.
I was going to say, if there are trees up there and the trees weren't harmed, then they're targeting the poles that were set up to videotape them or whatever.
Yeah. There aren't any trees in that area. It's just all desolate. You know, it's almost in a glacier. It's right in part of a glacier, you might say.
Well, even the you know, the lights in the sky that I saw in the video, not close up craft, but lights. These could not have been, in my opinion, if they are indeed lights in the sky, they could not have been conventional craft or any kind of physical or rather natural phenomenon that I am aware of. Couldn't be balloons, Chinese lanterns, the way they just move and zip in, zip out, and what have you. Now, have you taken, I guess the question that I'm building up to here, have you taken them in to be analyzed, this video?
Yeah, we have. We've taken some of the photos and had the photographs analyzed. And
the photographs?
The video, we've had the video analyzed by one scientist looked at it in Mexico. And he checked it out, and he said the same thing. He says, I don't know what generated this kind of energy up in the sky, but he said it's nothing. And he said also, too, the video we do have, the light coming off these is perfect light. It's like starlight. It has the full spectrum to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a halogen, or it's not a sodium light or anything that airplanes would have. And when we see an airplane, I had... a lot of different people up here. Colonel John Alexander was here, and we had it looked like one of those stealth bombers or whatever come over, and they're very quiet, and they flew right over the ranch while it was, and everybody was jumping up and down saying, "Oh, it's a UFO! It's a triangle!" And they're all getting excited, and I said, "It's not," and they got really upset at me, you know, and he was kind of shocked that I could tell it wasn't. I said, "There's no consciousness connected to it, and the light's dirty. Putting out a dirty light, you know, the wrong kind of light."
Mm-hmm.
And so right away, you know, he realized that I was using some major discernment. And then I told him they're going to be coming in from the west, And they did. Right after I said that, and I told them when, they came right in. I said, in 5 minutes, they're going to come in from the west. And a beautiful ship came right in from the west and just parked right above us. So he wrote a really good report up, and he's very skeptical and very science-based. And so,
what was his conclusion?
He said that definitely it wasn't what the things he saw there were definitely of a paranormal. They were paranormal. They were not Earth, anything earthly he could explain. And he said they weren't ours. You know. So,
did a skeptic, a scientific skeptic, use the term paranormal?
Well, he did. Yeah, he said it was. Well, see, he saw other things that he could not explain. He saw light spheres flying around in the field, you know, a foot off the ground.
Right.
Zipping all around the field, and I don't know what you would put that under other than some kind of paranormal activity.
And well, yeah, but generally the skeptics, the hardcore scientists, the conventional wisdom do not use the term paranormal. You know, it's either I can explain it or it doesn't exist.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, these people that come here, even the hardcore skeptics, it depends. Some people have such a bad attitude, nobody even deals with them, and neither do the ships.
I understand
that, you know, because I wouldn't even want to hang out with them. I don't know why an extremely advanced being would, but...
Well, they're just the person that I, you know, if... I think the beings would want to... come down and do a little jig in front of them, you know what
I'm
saying?
Well, you know, they do. That's the interesting thing is that they come up and they get converted. We have this footage. It's really good. We have a guy, and this is a classic. The guy's a school administrator. He's a scientist, and he's a Mormon on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, you know, this is all a bunch of nonsense. And his two sisters asked him to come up to the ranch. And so he said, well, you know, I'll come up with him just so I can spend some time with him, but this is all just a bunch of nonsense.
Right.
And so he's out in the field, and then all of a sudden the light spheres started showing up everywhere, and he started filming them, and his mind was blown on that. and then he saw some ships come in, and they came and powered up. They flew in and just really lit the sky up and made a nice turn, and he couldn't explain that. He says, you know, these aren't satellites. There's nothing that fits this description that we have. There's no running lights, no sound, no strobe, you know, there's nothing on these. And then what pushed him over the edge is when this massive triangle ship came flying right over us. and that pushed him over the edge, and we have his testimony. But it even gets more bizarre than that because he had a broken wrist. And he couldn't even touch it on anything. It was so painful, and he just broke his wrist. And I told him, I said, you know, these beings are extremely advanced beings, and they have healing capabilities. So if you actually ask them, and you're sincere, and you ask them for some help, I said, they might help you out with your wrist. And I left, and I went inside, and he was out there about 3 o'clock in the morning. And finally, he said, you know what, if you guys can help me with my wrist, I'd really appreciate it. And then he said he went out. He doesn't remember what happened after that. He just passed out, I guess, and he thought he fell asleep, and then he woke up and he had no pain whatsoever in his wrist, and he went back home and they x-rayed it and there was nothing wrong with it at all, and they took the cast off.
Oh my goodness.
You know, so here you take somebody that's a staunch skeptic when he came here,
yeah,
and scientific and religious oriented, and he was totally turned around.
It must be. Yeah. We're going to have to take another break to remind our listeners you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. I'm David Twitchell, and this is We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Mr. James Gilliland of the Gilliland Ranch in Trout Lake, Washington, and we're going to be right back to wrap her up. But we've got a startling question for him. Maybe the answer is more startling than the question. So stick around. I'd like you to hear this. We'll be right back.
In times like these, strangers at your door should be treated cautiously. But unwelcome strangers in your home can be your worst nightmare. Home invasion is a form of armed robbery where criminals break into homes through unlocked or open doors and windows. They even trick people into opening their doors to confront victims face to face. They can be after money and valuables, threaten personal assault, or take members of the family captive. But you can be proactive against these disturbing attacks. Learn how to protect yourself against home invasions. Never open the door to strangers. Secure your home with high security locks and quality door and window hardware. Consider a home security system and even a dog. It's also a good idea to devise an action plan for your family in case intruders ever do enter your home. To learn more about how to keep your home safe from intruders, visit ncpc.org. That's ncpc.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
The performing arts are an important facet of life. There is no substitute for the relationship between audience and performer. Your contributions to the Henry Ford Community College Theater Program enable students and faculty to continue promoting HFCC's artistic standards. By becoming a member of the Friends of HFCC Theater, you are allowing the theater program to prosper through establishing a scholarship fund, improving costume and scene shop facilities, and enabling the continuation of musical theater productions. For more information on becoming a Friend of HFCC Theater, call 313-845-6478.
That's right, King Harvest has surely come. Right here to WHFR Dearborn, the only station making waves. Come join me, your host, King Harvest, for my new show, Sunday evening, 6 to 8 p.m. We'll be bringing in the sheaves, a bumper crop with the best modern indie musicians mixed with distinguished past masters. Remember, that's King Harvest, 6 to 8 Sundays on WHFR, the only station making waves.
You're listening now to David Twitchell, and this is We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with Mr. James Gilliland. And Mr. Gilliland, we've been talking about your ranch and in Trout Lake, Washington. And let me ask you this. You ever taken a ride with these people?
Actually, I have.
Say it again?
I said, actually, I have.
You have. And how did you approach them on this?
I've had different experiences.
You didn't just stand there and stick your thumb out, did you?
No. We had several landings here, and in the very beginning, you know, in the area, and people would often see. I've got neighbors actually that testified when Paranormal State was here, and they saw ships hovering over the ranch and a blue beam coming down right over the ranch, over the house here.
Now, Paranormal State, that's A&E's show?
Yeah, they came and did a whole show on the ranch.
Okay.
And the ships appeared right on schedule, exactly when and where we said they would, and they got it on film as well. So, but they have the technology to beam you up, you know, just like Star Trek, at any time they want. And the beings that I connected with were played in, and it was a female. And she just took me for a ride, a short ride around the area up where the fire towers are, and then brought me back. And there was a couple in there, an elderly couple and a little boy in the tower drawing. And they were drawing. He had some crayons and things like that. And we pulled up right next to the tower, and they're out looking at it, and they were just freaking out. And they sent them kind of a calming energy to calm them down. And then they just brought me back, and that was it. And I said, that was kind of strange, you know. It was incredible, but I don't know what that was about. And then I see the elderly gentleman on TV, on the local TV station with Jeff Gianola, and they're talking about UFOs, and he's talking about how he actually was staying in one of the fire towers, and he had his nephew there. And his nephew actually drew a picture of the ship, and he held the picture up, and it was the same, you know, the exact same people. So you know, they can beam you up and put you right back in your bed, and you would think it was a very lucid dream, but then when the other details come in, you go, wait a second, that was a little too real. And on another occasion, I told them, I said, I just want to know what's going on. I'm tired of all the high-flying ships around here. I want to know what my connection is and everything. And then a beam came right through the wall and hit me in the chest. And those pictures are on the website as well. But
you have pictures of that?
What's that?
You have pictures of that?
Yeah, I have a burn mark in the middle of my chest where the beam hit me.
Okay.
And it made a huge red burn mark that morphed from a circular pattern to kind of a triangular pattern, and then it looked like a heart, and it went away. And it was really strange, and it wasn't painful. I had doctors check it out, and they said, that looks like a radiation burn. Are you experiencing any nausea or sickness or anything? I said, no, nothing, no pain whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But we actually took photographs of that event, and that was a different group that actually... This is really hard to explain unless you go into more of the spiritual and metaphysical side of it, but they have the technology to pull you out of your body, because we have our own soul and a body, and they can actually pull you out of your body, take you up on the ship, and mm-hmm. have a talk with you and put you back. And that's a different type of technology with some much more advanced beings. But they have, actually, I told them I wanted physical proof that this was a real-time event, mm-hmm. and they left that mark on my chest, so I couldn't argue with it. Every time I got up in the morning and looked in the mirror, I had this big burn mark in the middle of my chest. So I have an open mind, but I'm also very discerning, and I want physical proof on things.
Right.
And so,
right. So while the skeptics are out there saying, Mr. Gilliland, we're skeptical. We want proof of this. You are saying to the beings, I'm skeptical, I want proof of this. That's,
exactly.
That's ironic, if nothing else. And I was going to ask you something. Bottom line, what is their point? Now, you say they're Palladians, is mm-hmm. that right? How do you know that? They have told you we're from this star system, the Palladian star system?
Yeah, what they said was that we don't have any reference points for where they come from, mm-hmm. because they're in a different time.
A different time.
And a different dimension altogether. So they said the only reference points we would have is the Pleiades, because that's where they jump in from. But they're from a whole different system, which we have no reference points for. And a lot of these beings aren't really coming from this dimension at all. They're dropping down from, a seventh or sixth or fifth dimensional reality, and they have the technology to do that.
So when we're looking toward our stars in our galaxy, in our universe, we're not really looking in the right place to find these beings, are we?
No, even Michio Kaku said that. He gave a big talk about UFOs, and he says, we should be looking in other dimensions versus out in the universe for these beings. And mm-hmm. And there is the science now is there to back it up with the superstring theory and everything else. Where they say we have at least 11 dimensions.
Right.
But, they are here, too, in our dimension. They are flying all around. And, I hear people like Seth Shustak with SETI and things like that saying there's no evidence whatsoever.
He wants the ashtray from the dashboard.
Yeah. He just must not get out very often, because I wonder what kind of rock he lives under, because there's evidence everywhere. Very credible people that have seen this and video to back up what they've seen, and it's very obvious it's nothing of known origin here, so it's an unidentified flying object. And
right.
And you're using a radio trying to catch something that would have to go beyond radio waves to even get here. They'd have to have a different type of technology. I mean, all that beyond ridiculous.
I keep saying I think SETI is so silly because they're assuming that these beings, even if they are within our dimension, our galaxy, you're assuming they're using our same technology, and if they're more primitive than us, then they don't know about radio waves, and if they're more advanced than us, it would be like them. It would be like you trying to pick up smoke signals on your BlackBerry.
Yeah.
So uh-huh. what's the point of sitting?
What it is that they're just part of an agency there that makes people know that somebody is out there looking. So they don't have to do their own research.
Right. Well, if you were to admit that we do have mountains of evidence that UFOs are real, one way or the other. Well, why, he'd be out of a job because he'd be out of a career because they would shut him down. Why should they spend millions of dollars, billions of dollars on sending signals out there if nobody's going to answer, you know?
Well, you know, one thing about it is that, you know, both NASA and SETI, anything having to do with UFOs has the highest censorship or the highest national security rating,
right?
Even more than nuclear. So anything having to do with UFO has to go through NSA. Either anything with SETI or NASA concerning UFOs has to go through NSA to get the okay on whether they can release it. And that's where the door closes on it. So, you know, there are a lot of good people working in those organizations that know a lot, and they want to talk about, you know, what they've seen. But there's some new NASA footage that's been leaked out and some pretty incredible UFO shots and everything else on it. So they know they're here, and they have their own little elite force they send out.
Why,
whenever
sure.
There's an area, you know, a hotbed of UFO activity, they send their own groups out to check it out. So.
Why, sure. We just had David Sarita on the show, and he did that evidence of NASA's UFO case for UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an excellent video, too.
There's another one, I think it's called Luna something, that just came out on the net, and I send that over we have a newsletter, and I send it out, and it's just incredible. They have some really good, undeniable footage, you know, coming out of NASA, and I don't know how these guys got it, but, you know, when you see this footage, you just can't deny that they know that UFOs are here, and they've followed every one of our launches.
Yeah, is this Chandler's, Chandler or something, you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, no. I don't know. I'll have to find it again. I send it out over the site. I'll have to grab it.
Right from NASA, huh?
Yeah, it's like somebody grabbed some pretty incredible footage, and it's straight off the NASA archives. And you can see undeniable metallic disc going by and some of it. And other parts you see light spheres, and you hear the astronauts talking, and they're saying, you know, we've got a bogey, you know, we've got a, you know, a ship, and they're very clear about it. So,
yeah, there's one quote, that the astronaut said, "Houston, we still have the alien craft in sight,
exactly.
Under observation." That's what he said.
Yeah,
the alien craft under observation.
You know, with all the astronauts coming forward, there's so many astronauts that have spilled the beans, and then you've got all the alphabet agency and military people coming forward in the disclosure projects, and they have the radar readings and pilots, you know, it's just the evidence is out there.
So what is the bottom line from these beings that you have been in contact with? What is their message to us? Why are they here, and what is their message to us?
Well, you know, the higher beings, the really advanced ones, they say that we need to release the past, and because our old wounds and traumas are what's creating our tomorrow. And they want us to, you know, end the competition and the greed and start cooperating and work together. And, you know, they have a message. They, you know, they say we all come from the same source and we all return to the same source. And you know, it's time for us to transcend all culture and religious boundaries and start, you know, being kind to each other and the planet. It's a real basic message that, you know, basically clean up our consciousness and clean up our environment.
Is it very easy to accept the possibility that if these same beings were visiting 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, how people's minds would on Earth would assume that they were angels of God or God himself?
Oh, yeah, they call them the gods. You know,
yeah.
If you go to any major power spot or places where the temples are still exist, any of the pyramids or things, and you say, who built them? They point to the sky and they say the gods. You know, so.
Right. So, listen, we're going to have to wrap it up, but once again, your website?
It's eceti.org, eceti.org.
eceti.org.
Yes.
Okay. And we can check out more about you and the Gilliland Ranch by going there, right?
Yes. Okay. You can get all the information there.
Right. And I really appreciate you coming on the show this evening. and spending the time with us. And
well, thanks for having me on the show. And we always tell people, come out and see for yourself. You know, don't take anybody's word for it. Do your own investigation.
Right, right. Well, everybody's invited then, eh?
There you go.
Okay.
We have a giant field out here, plenty of tent space and bathrooms and everything.
Very good. Okay. Once again, Mr. James Gilliland, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Bye. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And you can, the show as well as all the forum shows is archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on the forum button on the homepage. And We Are Not Alone is also archived on my website, ufoimplications.com. So stay tuned to WHFR for the best in alternative music. And thank you for joining us today. And until next time at 10 a.m., on the first Saturday of each month, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.